KFMU DJ Eli Campbell here. One thing that makes Steamboat special is how many awe-inspiring people call our valley home. You could find yourself in line at the coffee shop next to an Olympian or sitting on the gondola next to the founder of a world-renowned business. Our community produces and attracts the best of the best in their respective fields, but most are so humble about it, you would never know. These extraordinary people are the common folk in the boat.
Welcome to Common Folk in the Boat. I'm Eli Campbell, DJ for KFMU Radio. This is our ongoing interview series where we are highlighting the people of Steamboat Springs that really make this community special. But beyond that, people that you might not even realize if you're standing next to at the Common Grouse Coffee Shop in line or on the gondola, people that really have extraordinary stories, anything but common. And that's most of the people in Steamboat Springs. Joined here by David Whitlinger of Billow, who is our sponsor. How are you doing today?
I'm great. You teed it up as, you know, special people that make this community what it is. I'm wondering, why am I here?
You're paying the bills. So that's how you made it on to the show.
Easy.
Today.
I'm the check writer.
Well, no, but I mean, you are. We're here as a series highlighting the special people of Steamboat. And I think one of the things that Billow wants to do is highlight just kind of other things that create positive vibes. What is it that makes this Steamboat community really special? It's a little segment that we're starting every interview with called What's Billow High On This Week? So what are you high on?
Oh, man, where do I start?
Yeah. There you go.
No, great question. I love that. And I love that. The idea that, of course, we're high on this community in general. And I know that's a play on words, but it is truth. I would say specific to Billow right now, what's kind of neat is we've spent a lot of time over the last month or so lining up. We have some incredible brand partners at the store, right? And people that support us in this community just as much as we do. But the idea is that we've lined up for the rest of the winter a whole slew of ongoing giveaways. So every 2 weeks, there's something new to win in the store. It's kind of a neat way to welcome people in, gives people an opportunity to win some incredible prizes. All these prize packages are like $300, $400 prize value. Boy, we're really high on that right now.
Yeah, well, that's great. And we appreciate your support being here as the sponsor for our series, Common Folk in the Boat. Now, I am really excited to bring our guest on today. She is someone I've known for many, many years, someone that's been a part of the Steamboat community for a long time, and someone that puts on an event here that is probably one of the foremost athletic events in Steamboat, if not in the state. It is Amy Charity of Steamboat Gravel. So I'd like to welcome her to the set. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, it's great to be here.
Yeah. So like I said, I first met you about 15 years ago, I want to say. That was at a time when you were not an author. You were not a coach. You were not a former U.S. Cycling team member, which is kind of your bio now.
Yeah.
It was a time when you were a spin instructor and in the financial world.
That's exactly right. I remember you taking those classes at Old Town Hot Springs with me.
Yeah.
Back in the day, probably 2009.
It was, I mean, my wife and I think we didn't have kids yet, but we had a dog that she had such separation anxiety. One of us always had to be home, and we would argue over who got to go to your spin classes.
I remember having both of you in there. Yeah. One at a time. And it was great. Yeah.
Now I want to ask you though, because obviously you've moved from there into a whole world of producing cycling events and things like that. But going back to that time, what were your life goals at the time? Were you looking ahead to making this big jump, or what were your thoughts of what your future in Steamboat would be?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to live somewhere that in a mountain town. I had grown up in Fort Collins, so coming to Steamboat was a natural progression to get closer to my family. And after college, I went straight into Capital One, so financial services. And that was something I felt very lucky to live in this amazing mountain town and also have that career path. And so goals living in Steamboat were just to get outdoors as much as possible and still maintain my career and make a living. And so getting outdoors meant everything from skate skiing to skimo to some alpine and then a lot of cycling. But to your point, there was absolutely no thought in the back of my mind that I would leave all of that and kind of pursue a cycling career.
And then you did. And then at 34 years old, you decided to make that jump. And I want to know what making that decision was like to leave behind the thing that you thought was your life plan for this whole new pursuit.
Yeah, it's terrifying. So I think people often fall in this natural progression of what's next. And I think, you know, after college, I thought I'm going to just go through the ranks in corporate life and I enjoy this and this is what you do. And I had that pause in my early 30s of discovering bike racing and realizing like, oh, I'm sort of good at this and I love it and I'm passionate about it. And so I think the scary part is leaving behind a lot of that comfort that you have, which is having financial stability and you know your next step. And so stepping away from that and moving into a bike racing career, especially when I was older, even back then, I was certainly older for getting into cycling. But I always thought, what am I going to, when I'm 70, when I'm 80, when I'm 90, what am I going to regret? And I think having not given it a shot, I would have regretted. So I took the leap and left that world and went full into bike racing.
Well, and hang on. So the book that you've written, it's called The Wrong Side of Comfortable, right?
Yeah.
So right there, you don't even need to read the story. The title tells it all.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. I think the title of it is just meant like The Wrong Side of Comfortable is just a funny phrase, but it's essentially like, you're just over there, like comfort's right here and you can,
you can
survive and we can do really hard things, but it's not going to be easy. And so that was probably the biggest jump I've ever taken in my life.
Absolutely.
Was leaving that stable career and moving into bike racing.
Well, and I think you mentioned it is you wanted to look back at 80 or 90 years old, not worried about not regretting the things that you didn't do. You know, you wanted to always say, I did everything that I could. And I think I'm not alone in, having worked in a place before where you kind of feel stuck. You kind of feel like, is this really what I want to do? But you're kind of set in comfort, whether it's the pay, it's the benefits, it's comfortable.
Yeah.
It's comfortable enough. And so a lot of people don't make that jump.
Yeah.
So what would you say to someone that, they're comfortable, but they've always had this itch to maybe do more?
Yes. I would say, one, it's never too late. But you can be any age and do this. I have a friend who went back and got her MBA when she was in her late 30s. So, and that always inspires me. I think that you don't know what you have possible. Like, we all can do these hard things. We all have so much potential and it's really easy to get into that rut. But you look at sort of what are the biggest downsides? Like, okay, I won't make as much money. I won't have this stable life. I'm going to get into bike racing, which is a scary, dangerous sport. But just knowing what that potential is. And so many people don't give it a shot and step away. And I would encourage anyone to. And yeah.
Now, if at the time you were living in Steamboat, and obviously when we look around Steamboat, there are so many people that are pursuing risks or dreams or their athletic endeavors. Do you think if you weren't living here, would that have still been the path that you would have chosen?
That's a really interesting question. I think you're right. In Steamboat, what I've always loved about it is it's people are here for a passionate life. And I think that's a little bit different than other places I've lived, say Washington, D.C. or living in England. I think some people it's career and it's that progress and it's how do you rise to the top or make money. And Steamboat, I've never found people to be on that path. The thing that people talk about in Steamboat is like, oh, I did this hike and it was like full moon and my dog was with me. And those are the things where like, oh, you are living. And that's what you care about more than what somebody drives or what they're wearing. And so I think that mindset that we have here of a passionate lifestyle probably did lend itself to be able to take that step more so than had I been somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I've never pieced that together, but I think it's a really good point.
I I would disagree. I moved here to be the best lifty possible. I knew someday I was going to work up to the Thunderhead. I'd start at the BC chair.
Thunderhead is work up,
and then my goals was gondola. You know, I wanted to be at the gondola indoors because that's the life, and that's when you know you've made it. Yeah. So
you've got to be here a long time to earn the indoor Gandhi seat.
I gave up. Yeah, I gave up on my dream.
And look what happened to you now. If you follow Dave, see Dave play on Instagram, you see that he's not doing anything fun ever.
No, and that's just it. I am not, so not to go off on that tangent, but yeah, see Dave play is just that. And it tags in exactly what you're saying, Amy, is like, I'm here for the lifestyle. I'm here for the fun. Most of us are. And so this idea that we can just enjoy this life that Steamboat's provided, cool.
Really lucky to live here and be surrounded by people who have a similar mindset.
100%.
Yeah. So then you went into this racing career for a few years, very successful U.S. national champion. I'm curious when that kind of, I mean, you were at a point where you were racing against women that were 10 years younger than you. And I actually listened to an interview that you did recently where you were talking about how when you got injured, it was a big deal because that might be a year of your 3-year career at the point that you are. Whereas for a 25-year-old, they can kind of get back into it and still have a long career.
They have more time. They might recover faster. There's a few components to that.
What was the support system that you had when you did go through those lows that kind of helped you to really stay focused on what the dream was?
Yeah, I think my family was incredible. My parents still came out to all the races, regardless of where I was, which was great. And then the cycling network, you have this really strong team. So the team dynamic, you always have a few teammates that are the ones that they have your back no matter what. And that is, it's critical because it's scary to get a cold when you're a cyclist. So it's, if someone's coughing near you, you're like, no, I have nationals in 2 weeks. Like this can be career ending. Like don't breathe on me. So it's such a funny lifestyle of how healthy you have to be. And you do make these compromises. So going to a wedding, for example, I always think of that as like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be on my feet. There's going to be a lot of food and alcohol and like I should be training and that will probably compromise the next day. So you're just constantly thinking of how do I have a balanced life and can I? And the answer is often you don't. Yeah. But having that support network of people who are living similarly is really helpful. Yeah. So people who are on the same track as you is really critical in this.
Yeah. Then you came to the end of your career and I've always wondered, you know, you've chased that dream. You earned a national championship. You kind of reached where you wanted to. And then what was your plan? Was your plan to go back into the financial world or did you have event production in your mind at that time? What did you think was going to happen?
Definitely not event production. It's funny. And I'd say every cyclist, and then I'll broaden that to every athlete goes through this when you have been at sort of a top level in your sport. So I'd raced in Worlds in Richmond. And for cycling, Worlds is the ultimate. It's on par with the Olympics because it's an annual thing. And to do that was absolutely one of the highlights of my life. So you finish that and getting out of that level of excitement and following your passion and fitness and that network of friends and all of that is really, really challenging. And I think in our town, ski racers go through that. And I think a lot of people go through what does retirement look like from a sport, regardless of your age, if you're in your 20s or your 30s. And it's tough. And so I knew I still wanted to live in Steamboat and I landed at Biketown USA, which was it was a nonprofit. And the idea was, how do you promote cycling tourism throughout the year in Steamboat. And this was a time when we didn't have many summer visitors and the winter, it was all about skiing. It was all about the winter. And so how do we bring people in to understand that Steamboat's this great town to ride a bike? Yeah. And so it's funny in hindsight, what a natural progression that turned into, but that was my job was executive director on Biketown USA. And that was also the time I decided to write a book. So it was like, in this career.
So you're the reason that we have so many visitors in Steamboat in the summer now.
Well, I know this is a very controversial topic.
I'm going to give us a little space, Amy. This is getting heated.
Yeah, no, it's, I would say that there were a lot of factors that happened to what brought more visitors to mountain towns, not just Steamboat, many mountain towns. And the influx in gravel cycling is one of those factors. There are a lot more, even COVID and working from remotely and from home. There are many things that have led into why there are more visitors and why there are more people living in mountain towns. But I would say that our incredible cycling here and that being discovered has been one of those things.
And to that point, so you were part of the founding group of Steamboat Gravel. And I still remember back in 2018, I remember I was out on a bike ride and you passed me in a car. There was a bunch of you out scouting the very first routes out then. And it was an event that went from a non-event, nobody knew about it, to this event that was world-class in 1 year. You know, within the first year, it was on a professional racer's bucket list to the recreational rider's bucket list. And I want to kind of see from your opinion, what was it about Steamboat, not just the roads and the gravel, but just Steamboat as a whole that helped make Steamboat Gravel go from something nobody had ever heard of to something everyone has to do?
Yeah, I think there were several factors in it. One, we are so lucky with where we live. We're unique in having this incredible branching roads, a lot of gravel roads, unpaved roads surrounding us, but having the infrastructure of a mountain town that is very unique to this area. So if you even look at some of the Mount Aspen or Avail or Breckenridge or any Crest of Butte, they don't have that same setup. They have the infrastructure, but not the ranching roads. Or you can go out to Eastern Colorado and there are the roads, but not the infrastructure and not sort of this dream mountain town location. So I think as a starting point, we're really fortunate for just what we have here as our natural resources. Taking that a step further, we started to partner with people who were critical in this. So Boys and Girls Club, Community Ag Alliance, Route County Riders, as well as the city. So we had some really strong relationships with those advocacy partners and then local sponsors. And so when you can live in a town like Steamboat, and we are all similarly minded, and this is a beautiful place. We are passionate about our sports. You're able to really talk to the town of, oh yeah, there are some locals who want to be mountain hosts and bring people here. And that was really the concept. And so I think Steamboat was, in addition to being this beautiful place we all want to be and want to live and a great place to ride a bike, the people, the community of Steamboat really helped make SBT Gravel a success from the beginning. It is absolutely critical that you have local support. And we had that from the get-go.
You raced the first year, right?
I did. It was the first time I'd ridden my bike that far, and I didn't even know if I would live, quite honestly. I want to get back to something you just said, though, and I think one of the coolest things that I've seen in the iteration of the event is how you've since even gotten a further relationship going with the Fetchers and Jay and the whole ranching community and how they're bought in. I mean, heck, the race goes through their property. And what an interesting, unique partnership that you don't always think about, cycling and ranching. And I know you could probably go on for hours, but how did that happen? And how is that, you know, helping this whole event take off the way it has?
Agriculture and recreation, I think, they're worlds that at the end of the day, we love the same things. And we love nature and we love being out in nature. And so I think the truth is we constantly need to work to make sure that we don't go too far with our events. And I don't know what that looks like, too many people or too much of an impact, but that we're able to have a positive impact. And there are many things. Some is economic is the obvious one. So the visitors who come to Steamboat spend a lot of money on lodging and restaurants and shopping. And that does go to that helps with Steamboat and as a city and our county. So there's that economic impact. But it's also trying to partner with people like Jay Fetcher, who really embrace the race and sees that these two worlds not only can coexist, but can really collaborate and do some great things. I will say we're constantly looking for additional ways that we can work together, whether that's with something like a 4-H, or how do we continue to bring these two worlds together. And it's something that we work on all the time, and it's ongoing.
Yeah. No, it's great. And it's not just smart business, but it's more just community relations. And I love that about this event, different from other events. We've all attended events in other areas that are all about the whoever the event company is and how much profit they can squeeze out of that. And that is not the feeling I get from SBT.
That's never been our driver. And I think that when we started out, every single thing we thought about was, how do we invest in causes we believe in, our riders and our community? And that was it. And we think about that with everything we do.
That's the
causes side of things is something that we've taken to levels I never even imagined. And supporting Steamboat locally has been a really big deal as well. So that's something that we've carried with us, is just essential to our values.
And now with that, the event has grown to 3,000 people entrance, and there's a lottery to get in. You're going into your fifth year of an in-person race. It's the first time, though, that you're making some major changes to the course. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, and the reason behind this is we want to have sort of go to a different area. We asked on our rider survey if riders would be interested in checking out something different, and they are. We also know we can bring some economic benefit to other areas. So Hayden is on the list for potentially where we'll take the new routes. And that will mean more people will come into Steamboat, go to Hayden, do their summer rides in Hayden to check out the course. When we have our group rides in the week leading up to the event, more people will be in that area. So it gives additional exposure and a positive impact to that area. And then we also think that there's a way to not always be on the same course. So we've really heavily been on the north side of Rout County over the past several years. And so our thought is, let's go west, let's go south a little bit more. And that's not to say that we won't want to go back up north, but we have incredible roads around here. We have over 600 miles of gravel roads in our county. And so to show different areas of the course is going to be another really good option the riders, I think, will love.
And out in Hayden, they have some incredible, some of the first gravel riding was in the Cog in Hayden.
Yeah.
So it's amazing kind of natural progression for the event.
Well, and I'll interject that I'm sure as a race director, it adds a whole nother level of complexity as far as logistics go. But back to the whole point of how Steamboat became this mecca is we are privileged to have so many miles and miles and miles of amazing sweet gravel, right? What do you call it? The powder, champagne gravel. I love that.
It's a playoff.
The idea that if you're able and you're not pulling your hair out trying to reroute, you know, why not explore other areas and keep it fresh for the racers, the participants, as well as just the community?
That's our thinking, and we'll see how it goes. And these are challenging courses, the ones that we're looking to do. It's a shorter distance for our black course, but more climbing.
I was going to say, you're not adding more climbing.
We're adding more climbing. So,
all right, I gotta go start training.
There will be some people who love it and some who don't as much, but I think that's all part of it, is what can we do to create a really good experience.
I don't know about you, I feel like it's designed to be a very challenging race. It should not be easy. It shouldn't be taken for granted that these are the top echelon of racers, as well as just your everyday people that have goals. I mean, that's where I fall in, is just somebody who says, I've never ridden that far, never climbed that much, but this is what I'm going to put on my bucket list and I'm going to go for it.
You are exactly what we were hoping when we came up with what our values are. And safety is one of them, and fun is one of them, but challenge is another. And that was always important. And there are other races that are over the top hard. They're supposed to be terrifying. And that's not where we wanted to fall. We wanted to be a good challenge where you set a goal, you do something maybe you've never done before, and you walk away feeling great that you've accomplished something. And so that was embedded in our values from day one.
And now you've grown beyond just Steamboat. You've gone to Finland. You've done some riding in Portugal. You've got rattle gravel in Australia. Yep. And with all of that, as you expand internationally, what is it from Steamboat, the original Steamboat brand, that you take with you to these other rides to make sure it stays true to its roots?
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. It's the GRVL brand, and now it has a reputation for having a very high standard. And it's that standard was really developed from our values, the things we take very seriously. And it's, we want to be an inclusive race. And what that means is, and you spoke about it earlier, we have our young, we have a 7-year-old who does a race, and we have people on the other end of the spectrum of age. And we are incredibly diverse in terms of backgrounds, whether that's your, where you're from, or your cycling background, or you're even new to cycling. We get people who, this is their very first bike race. We had over 500 people that was the case for SBT. So inclusivity is a big deal. And what that means to us is making sure everyone feels welcome. You can be a world tour pro, or you can be brand new and you feel good and you feel welcome here. Steamboat really set the standard for creating more than just the event. And so we never wanted people to just come do one day race and then they're out of there. You know, back in my day, you'd go to a Criterium and you'd show up in the parking lot and you don't go with your friends or family, and you do your race and you leave and you don't talk to anyone. And we want it to be the exact opposite, which is, this is community. You spend several days, you go back year over year, and you bring more people each time. So as we're planning Finland and Rattle in Adelaide, Australia, we are putting that exact same thing in place. Is we have the same values that we spoke about. We will invest in our riders, our communities. We will still have these great causes that we're promoting, and we'll have multi-day events. So people come in and they hang out and they build community, and it's something they want to do the next year. So certain things like the hill climb we did on Howlison is just one example of making it fun, having more people that want to come in and can participate in that. It raises money for a great cause, the cycle effect, and it makes sure that we don't take it too seriously. It's a race, but everyone should have fun too and spend a few days here. Yeah. So you'll see that at the other events that we're hosting around the world.
And speaking of the inclusivity, you know, you bring in the best of the best professional racers to this event. They come for a big purse. I was lucky enough to be your route director for a couple of years at this event. And for me, I was never one following the front of the race. I was at the back of the race. And those were some of the most incredible stories. The guy who was on Birkenstocks riding a fixie across this whole course, or the woman who was the amputee who had done Leadville the day before. Yes. And, you know, just the different things that were driving them, even though they were coming in as the sun was setting, it's still, they were the story. They were getting as much of an applause at the finish line as the top pros.
Absolutely. They are the ones who are really inspiring all of us. And that's the dream of the event. That is the face of the event. That is what we're all about, is getting people to take on a challenge and accomplish something and have fun while they're doing it, and have the support of our town, which is amazing. And then our team, and then the other riders. And it's incredible to see that come together. There's a real feeling when you're part of SBT Gravel, and people talk about it, it's intangible, but there's this incredible energy of positivity. And I'd say that's one of the things I'm most proud of, is to see that and feel that, and know that our town helps bring that really positive energy.
Yeah. Well, having been your route director in the past, I do have a little bone to pick. When I was working for you, we were trying to create magic on a very tight budget, and so much so that we did away with vowels. You couldn't afford the vowels, and now we're at Rattle Grattle. You've hit the big time. You bought a vowel.
I know.
What happened there?
Success. It's going to happen.
I know. We did. We bought an A, and it was not. We did. It was a very. So the background with Rattle is, it's ADL is the airport code in Adelaide. And everyone calls it Rattleaide, all the locals, including Tiffany Cromwell. She's a business partner, also a professional cyclist from Rattleaide, as she calls it. And so it was going to be RDL for a while. And we just thought that was too much of a jump. No one was going to understand RDL for Adelaide. And so we added the A. It was highly controversial. We're still hearing about it.
I mean, if I had just worked there in the good times, I guess.
I know. I wouldn't anticipate too many more vowels coming into the equation. This was an exception. So we really like to speak the GRVL language of not using vowels.
I love it.
I still remember even putting together a route or something where we put a Y in parentheses because we couldn't determine whether or not it was a vowel. So
should we allow the Y? I know there's some complicated conversations we have to have in team meetings.
I was gonna say I just love the fact that this is a conversation piece. I mean, I and vowels, is this what we're talking about today? Okay, all right. Yeah.
It's part of the brand. Yeah, it's part of it.
I love it.
The GRVL PRT. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we were able to end with a couple laughs there. Again, want to thank Amy Charity, coach, speaker, former U.S. national champion, CEO of Steamboat Gravel and all of its offshoots. Just another one of the common folk in the boat.